Okay, so there are four kinds, four archetypes, four system archetypes. And their achievement out of control relative achievement and relative control. They are found in many domains, including in information security, and also in the general area of security. The European Union has a program, a research program called Security, and they understand security not only in terms of information security, but also in the question of protecting assets, protecting citizens, and so on and so on. And because the archetypes look the same in many different domains, you find common structures that you can transfer from one to the other. Now, let's have a look at the underachievement archetype. In the underachievement archetype, the intended consequence feedback loop is reinforcing. The action influences the outcome with same polarity, plus, and the outcome influences the action with the same polarity. In this case, it is desired to have a reinforcing. We will see examples later. The problem is that in many occasions, such intended reinforcing feedback loop will provoke a balancing feedback loop as unintended consequence, like here. The outcome influences, perhaps with some time delay, the system in some way, in the same direction, and then the system will react, weakening the outcome that you actually try to reinforce. So we have a balancing unintended consequence feedback loop. Sometimes the time delay can be here or in both, sometimes the outcome influences the system reaction in a negative way, whereas the system reaction influences the outcome in a positive way, with positive polarity. But the outcome, the unintended consequence loop, is then a balancing one. And typically, there will be some boundary that makes it difficult for a decision maker to see or to prevent the unintended consequence feedback loop. In order to mitigate or to eliminate the impact of the unintended consequence loop, we need a solution feedback loop. In many cases, the reason for the balancing unintended consequence loop is some constraint on resources. So typically what you have to do is that the action to achieve some intended outcome should also address the question of the resource constraint. So by eliminating or weakening the resource constraint, you will act on the system reaction. So in this case, you get then the action. The more action, the less resource constraint. The less resource constraint, the less system reaction. The less system reaction, the more outcome, which gives a reinforcing feedback solution loop. So Wolstenholmer summarizes this in this sentence: the solution to an underachievement archetype lies in using some element of the achievement action so as to minimize the reaction in other parts of the organization, typically by unblocking the resource constraint. So this is then the archetype, the underachievement archetype, and let's now have a look at the possible examples of underachievement. The next slide is basically the following. It is divided in three columns: a generic version of the archetype, a semi-generic, meaning you put a bit more of specification on the different variables, and then some very specific examples, and then I give an example of solutions. So in the generic archetype, under achievement, you have some action outcome reinforcing loop. That's the intended consequence. And the outcome elicits some system reaction in a balancing feedback loop that works against the outcome. And as I said before, often the problem is that there is some constraint on resources. Semi-generic versions of the underachievement archetype are archetypes known before as limits to success and the tragedy of the commons. So let's look at limits to success. In limit to success, consider some effort so as to achieve some performance. This reinforcing feedback loop can lead to a resource constraint that limits the effect of what you are doing. For instance, if you are a very motivated student, you would employ a lot of effort in getting more performance. The limits are, for instance, that you get tired if you are doing too much effort over time, so your resource constraint will be your ability of your body and your mind to sustain that performance. So if you pass these limits, then this will decrease your performance and you are getting less return for your effort. A more specific version of limit to success you see here in the archetype that is known under the name growth and under investment. Very often, organizations have devised some new product that they expect to sell well. So they are selling, they get orders, these orders lead to sales, and so on. And this reinforces, if the product becomes well known, people recommend it, and that grows very fast. What happens many times is that the producer has not anticipated that success and they are suffering from limited manufacturing capacity. So sooner or later they start suffering from this because they are selling things that they cannot deliver in time, and then the customers, as the production lead time is increasing, will cancel orders or stop ordering more. This has happened many times. In fact, there is a very famous case that relates to the beginning of the modern companies like that led to Ryanair, that is now very successful. Ryanair is very successful because they learned from the mistakes of the American company that was called People's Express, that was the first cheap air company in the world. They were established in the 80s. At that time, flying was very, very expensive, and many flights were not full because they were so expensive. So people were making, the companies were making a lot of money per passenger, but they have few passengers, so that was not very profitable. Then People Express actually identified nearly all the elements of a successful modern air company. They decided to fly point to point so as to eliminate costs. People will have to check in their luggage, and if they wanted to continue, recheck it. But that limited the cost of baggage handling. They flew from airports to airport that were cheaper, and they make the prices of the tickets very low, so they got full airplanes. And they had a tremendous success, and they had a reinforcing loop. As people were buying tickets and flying very cheaply, more people ordered and so on, so they had a tremendous growth. But their resource constraint was simply they didn't have enough fleet, they didn't have enough airplanes, they didn't have enough pilots, they didn't have enough stewardesses, and so on and so on. And when they finally started buying new airplanes and recruiting more people, the competitors started reacting against that, and they were lowering their prices, so they got a tough competition. Just at the moment when they had to heavily invest in new airplanes, and where the customers were becoming disappointed because of the delays and the problems and cancellations and so on. So what happened to People's Express was a tremendous growth like this, and then they fell because they had underinvested, they had not prepared for that. That happens very easily because reinforcing loop can really grow extremely fast. They have a tendency to escalate exponentially. Another example of underachievement archetypes is known as the tragedy of the commons. The commons is a term for some ground, some pasture that is not owned by a person alone, by community. Commons occur in many countries. We have examples of commons today are the seas, the oceans, where everybody outside of the territorial limits can go out and fish in for tuna or whatever. And whenever you have such a situation, you are doing some activity. In the commons originally, that was studied at what happened in the common pastures in England, where people could put their sheep. They had a gentleman agreement to put a certain number of sheep, but that was not controlled because that was a big, big pasture. So many people thought, okay, I put some more sheep because the more I put, the higher the reward for me is. But everybody thought like this. And by putting too many sheep, then they used too much resources and erosion ensued, and they destroyed the commons. Similarly, in fisheries, if too much is fish, then that can lead to the destruction of the habitat. This has happened many times. For instance, something like 30 years ago, when Canada finally got full control of the cod grounds in Newfoundland, they put so many people went shipping with very effective sheep that in a few years they simply decimated the cod, and what was an extremely valuable resource in the previous century. People say that you could walk on the fish if you step out because there was so much cod, and some biologists even thought that it was impossible to overfish. But that was of course silly. With modern ships that detect all the fish swarms with echolot and so on, and that cod are able to detect even the last fish, then you can destroy that. So the consequence of overfishing was that the resources of cod in Newfoundland virtually disappeared, and it's going to take generations until this is back to sustainable, perhaps it will never happen because in between other fishes have taking over. Okay, so we have these three examples of underachieving archetypes. If you now consider the specific example of growth and underinvestment, the solution that people expressed should have considered and anticipated was at the same time when they were considering how do we increase the sales by cheap tickets, flying point to point, and so on and so on, they should also have addressed the issue of starting recruiting and preparing for ordering more flights, at least make reservations so that they quickly could have more airplanes and more personnel. I indicated one thing here. If you look at the boundary, I put it dash here. Dash means in order to understand what is happening, you have to see through the boundary. You have to make an analysis and make it kind of transparent. In the case of the tragedy of the commons, there are several solutions. If you consider a tragedy of the commons in terms of a national park where visitors derive pleasure and that attracts more visitors, but that caused damage to the park, then you have to increase the land available or else to increase the price so that less people come, but you get still the same profit from that. Okay, any questions to the underachievement archetype? As I said, later in the exercise, you will have possibilities to exercise this on security. Now, out of control. In the case of out of control, the desire, the unintended consequence feedback loop is some control action, meaning some balancing feedback loop. What often happens is that this control action itself leads to a system reaction, and that this system reaction leads to an increase of the problem in need of control. So you get an unintended consequence that is a reinforcing feedback loop. And then the solution archetype would be to relate the problem in need to control so that you debilitate to weaken the system reaction. Now, as before, more specific examples. If you see here, you have again several columns. This is a completely generic archetype. And then you see here two semi-generic out-of-control archetypes. Semi-generic because they have more detail but not full detail as to what the problem is. One is fix that fails, and the other one is shift the burden. In fix that fails, remember this is still an out-of-control archetype, but the name is given because you are trying to fix some problem with a balancing feedback loop. But sometimes the fix that you are applying leads to an increase in the problem, and then you have the reinforcing loop caused by the very bad solution that you are using. Let's see that specifically. Suppose you have a lot of criminality in some country and the politicians decide we need more police. Okay, so more police will first reduce the crime because they are getting the offenders. But then you have the problem, you have many, many criminals waiting to be handled in court, and those that are convicted go to prisons, but then they are overcrowded or you don't have prisons. So in the end, just by unilaterally trying to solve the problem by more police causes the problem of overcrowding of court and prisons, which is a reinforcing feedback loop working against. So what would be then the solution? Well, you have not only to consider police recruitment, but you have to handle the question how to improve or to increase recruitment of lawyers for courts and to increase the number of prisons. If you want to catch more criminals, then you have to put in somewhere. So you have to think of this. It's in a sense obvious, but still so many times these problems occur because short-sighted thinking, instead of thinking in a system, people think linearly. In shifting the burden, what happens is that the treatment of some problem is not treating the problem, but it's treating the symptom of the problem, and that leads to an increase in the actual problem. For example, suppose people are overworked and they are stressed. They come home and take a drink with the vodka or whiskey or whatever, and that decreases the stress. So you have a short-term solution by treating the symptom, but you are not addressing the fundamental issue, which is you are not able to relax because of the stress in the job or because you are overworked. And what happens is that treating the problem by having some drinks, if you are doing this regularly, you can become addicted. And then you have two problems. You have the problems of stress from your job, and you have the stress because you are now addictive. So what you have to learn, and that's the fundamental solution, is to relax from your stress, either by becoming better, decreasing your workload, or whatever, and so that you don't have to try to treat the symptoms. We will see examples of out-of-control archetypes in security, but then I have a question to you. Have you seen such a control, out-of-control archetype in security before? Spend 1 minute thinking. Which one? Okay, it could be. It would be very nice, Konstantin, if you could draw that with Vensim. And you have here in the room, you have questions and answers here. And that's a forum where you can put in things. Actually, I have still some inputs from last year, which I can leave you, so that you can see the examples. But I would recommend that you engage, you all students engage here, because there you can have a conversation with other students, and you can get motivated, you can share things and so on. So please use this here, this forum. It would be very nice if you draw the archetypes, or you can send it to me for comments, and I can post it. When I ask the question is because we had yesterday, without saying it, actually such situation. What you see here is an out of control archetype. The intended outcome is by investing in technology to reduce the security gap. The unintended outcome is the system reaction. You are neglecting the information security management system, you get a reinforcing loop working against. So this is an out of control archetype already, you saw it yesterday. And we continued by proposing a solution, which is this one. If you compare this with the lecture that you are having today, then you have the out-of-control archetype, like this, balancing loop, reinforcing loop against, and the solution loop here. But it would be very nice if you can draw your archetype and send it to me. I am interested in seeing the details. And then I can help you give you feedback about that. Okay, so that was the out-of-control archetype. Now relative achievement. In relative achievement, we have two reinforcing loops. The intended outcome is to exert some action so as to improve some outcome for some section or some domain. What typically happens is that you are at the same time influencing the outcome for another sector, another domain in the organization, and you get a reinforcing loop which is working virtuously for a sector A and viciously, also in the way you don't wish it, for B. And typically, again, this is difficult to see in some reason. The solution, feedback loop, is typically a regulatory action resulting in a balancing feedback loop that tries to achieve a certain target for A that you have identified as a good solution. So instead of letting this climb to the skies, you define the target of what you want to achieve with A. And there you have again generic, semi-generic, specific, and a solution for an example. So the generic action favoring A, relative outcome for A, and the unintended consequence that the corresponding situation for B goes in the opposite direction. Here is an example that is called success to the successful. You are promoting some part of the organization. This leads to more success of A, and because this is working as you desire, do you invest even more in promoting that all the time? Same time, are you neglecting B? Very specifically, that was what has happened in society. Society has had a tendency to prefer males and to encourage them, which has been a block in female success. In modern societies, we have regulatory actions so as to eliminate or mitigate this preference for one gender. In relative control, you have an action to control some outcome. We call it a relative outcome because, again, that's part of an organization. And the unintended consequence could be a reaction that compromises what you want to achieve in A. And the solution loop will be to define some target again for the section A that you want to control, and you apply a solution feedback loop to achieve this absolute target. Notice that in balancing loop, it is convenient to indicate the target of the loop, that is what you want to achieve. We will see that later in examples. So when you want to close, okay, I can take the example from yesterday. There you see that. Let's go back to the lecture from yesterday. Okay, where are we? Here. Here you see the target of the balancing feedback loop. The target is what the feedback loop tries to achieve or to reach. And that is, the idea is that you should achieve the desired security. That's the target of the loop. And it is a it is a convenient thing to identify the target of the loop. Sometimes the target is imposed. It is a decision that is consciously made by some management. In this case, in this organization, in this company, the chief security officer has identified as a goal, we should achieve that security level. And then the whole process is devised in a way that we should reach that. In other cases, when you have complex systems, often the target is given by some other loops that are influencing the system. But all the time, whenever you have a balancing feedback loop, the balancing feedback loop will try to control some process, to close some gap, and the result of closing that gap will be to reaching some target. In this example, the desired security has been fixed at some level. So you have some metrics for security, and you have said, okay, I want to achieve that level of security. In more complex systems, the target can be changed over time because it is being influenced by other factors. The desired security in a complex system could be the outcome of some other processes. For instance, it could be that the organization has determined the cost of the security that you are incurring because of incidents and so on, and then you have a goal of profit, and this goal of profit translates to achieving some security level. Questions? Okay. So we are now finishing the lecture, and we will spend the last hour. I will spend with you in exercises. This is a very important hour because you need that practice, as I said, the same way a football player needs to train. So you need to train here. But I'm sure that you will find these archetypes interesting. So now going back to the here. So let's have now the slide 17. So back to the boundaries. Boundaries, remember, they are all kind of barriers, whether they are physical or mental, organizational, of power, of accounting, even mental differences, disciplines, and so on. All these things that are system organization and that can create delays or difficulties in seeing through what is happening. So very often when some problem in a company and organization is being addressed, so the unintended consequences of the solution that you are trying to achieve occur somewhere else. That's very typical. And then, because it occurs somewhere else, and there is a distance between where you intervene and where the consequences, the unintended consequences arise, this is difficult to see or is difficult to anticipate. But even when the action and the reaction, the unintended consequence, happen in the same sector of the organization, if they are marked time delays, they also have the consequence of hiding the connection between the cause and the consequence. So they are kind of mental barriers. Sometimes the impact of some actions can take days, weeks, months, even years. We have even examples, historical examples, where the full impact of some actions can come after more than 100 years. For instance, in ecological systems. Think of the introduction of rabbits to Australia, where they didn't have natural enemies, and then they grew to the hundreds of millions. There were sometimes so many rabbits being killed in the roads that the roads became slippery and the cars crashed, because they were not driving on asphalt but upon dead rabbits and so on. This has happened many, many times. There are many examples of ecological consequences where the full consequences of some decisions come after hundreds of years, even several hundreds of years. Deforestation, climate change, and so on. There are so many examples. In security, we don't have so marked delays. At least we haven't lived for so long with that. But we do have impacts of decisions that were taken many, many years ago. For instance, the way the internet was devised is having consequences today on security, and it will continue having impacts and so on. Okay, so Boston Holman make a classification about the mechanism that tend to mask or to hide the unintended effects. Even effects that you would say they are obvious, still they can be hidden. And the classification of Wolsten-Holmen, I refer here to the paper of Wolsten-Holmen, is like this. You have the case of the totally blind. They simply don't see anything. They just consider the intended consequence, forget about everything, they don't see nothing. And then they are taken very much by surprise. Often, they do see some of the problem, but only partial. Sometimes they see what is happening, but they prefer not to see that. A famous example is when the Admiral Nelson, with his British fleet, it was in 1809 or something like this, decided to attack Copenhagen. At that time, Denmark was kind of allied with France. And he came, and actually there were a lot of Danish warships waiting and prepared to defend. But Nelson put the telescope the other way around and say, "Ships, I don't see any." He decided not to see and decided to attack. Of course, he felt confident that he was strong enough, and that was perhaps a little bit meant as a way of making a joke to inspire his officers. In the end, I believe, no, he survived. Nelson died a few years later in Trafalgar in southern Spain, in a similar battle. In other situations, some people see what is happening, but they are afraid to act. There are many psychological reasons why you could be afraid to act. It could be perhaps that you recognize that it's going to be a lot of work, or that may arise opponents or whatever. Sometimes it's seen, but you choose not to believe, you don't believe it. You're actually in a situation where you are not completely convinced. Some other times you are seen, but there are risks, and the risk appears to you too high, so you don't take it. Sometimes you see the consequences, but you consider that, okay, that's going to happen that late, that I don't need to consider that now, or I will have time to repair that, or whatever. There is a famous French saying that has been imported in many languages. In French it said, "Après nous, le déluge." I don't know if you have that in Ukrainian. It is, what is deluge? I think in English is deluge as well. After us, the deluge. Deluge is a heavy flood, a tremendous flood. So after us, the flood will come. It won't affect me. That's what it basically says. Do you have you have it in Ukrainian, yes. Probably you have it in many languages. Originally it's French. Après nous le déluge. Then you can see that, but choose to ignore that for political reasons. And that's something that has happened many times in history, both in democratic and non-democratic countries, especially, of course, in non-democratic countries. But even in democratic countries, we have the term politically correct. That's things that you can do and say, and others, they are so unpopular, you better do not provoke. Of course, this is a problem that we have to deal. We shouldn't ignore things because of political reasons if they are important. But it happens. Sometimes you see that, but the problems are ignored because you assume nobody cares about the side effect. So, okay, it will happen, but let it happen. That's not so important. And some other times you do see it, but when you recognize that it's too late to achieve that. So this mechanism occurs in practice, and you could find some examples. In fact, I have a challenge to you students is, could you find some example of these situations in organizations, if possible, related to security? Of course, what we want is to see that and thinking in terms of the system that is considering all the effects and so on. In order to do that, very often we devise simulation models, because the simulation models, they allowed us to see what is happening. So for instance, If we look at the model for emergency handling, then I can simulate what is happening. And then I am able to see, for instance, what happens to errors committed. And then I get diagrams that indicates me how this happens over time. When the event happens, the number of errors quickly escalates, and then as the problem is in control, then that decreases. And then I can make experiments as to how I can influence the number of errors. Why are we interested in simulation systems? Why do we that? Well, there are many issues to that. When you develop a simulation system, a model for simulation, you have to understand your problem. So to create a model, you have to go deep into the problem, understand how it works, how the different factors influence each other. So the very fact of creating a simulation model of a problem is a very good investment for a company that has the problem, because it forces the company to think through the problem, find the relations between the different factors. And this engagement in building the model is a very positive engagement. And be aware that when you are making models for simulation for a problem in a company or an organization, these models are not just made by somebody sitting in his or her room and playing with Vensim. You have to address the issues of the organization, so that's a teamwork. You have to talk with people from different sectors of the organization, because the problems tend to affect different sectors and they have elements from different sectors. So it is a teamwork. And there is a discipline in system dynamics modeling called group model building that uses people to work together to create models. So you need people who can do that in Vensim, but you need other people that are good at asking the right questions and identifying the factors. And then when building the model, you discuss how the model behaves with people who are experts in the different areas of the organization, that we call validating the model, making sure that the model makes sense and so on. And then the other thing, so first, models are very useful. The very process of making, devising, designing the model gives you a lot of insights. And then you get insights by using the model and simulating what if, before you commit a lot of resources in some solution which perhaps doesn't work or it's not the best one. You can explore different solutions with the simulation model. And what is very important is the following. We have an empirical insights. Cost of modeling to benefit of modeling. So how much do you invest in the model, and what are the returns on investment? Well, they are 1 to 200. Experience shows in many domains that you invest $1, actually we are speaking of course, typically models will cost hundreds of thousands or 1 million or whatever. The return on investment is empirically about 200 times higher. And that's why simulation models are increasingly being devised by consultant companies for customers, and more customers want them. And that's also why it's wise for you, some of you, to become good modelers. Okay, then see you again in 15 minutes. And then I will lead you through solving some of the problems in the exercises, so that you can yourself devise archetypes.